Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, coming straight at you from the Jedi Temple here on Coruscant. It's a big celebration here as we hit 100 episodes, and with me, as he is always, the one, the only, magnificently handsome, Jedi Master John Mills.
Well, I am magnificently handsome. Sadly, that has led to my cloning. Meaning I am no longer the one and only, but that's really only a good thing for the galaxy at large.
I guess, so.
It's a charm offensive on the part of Chancellor Palpatine to send me out into the galaxy. How are you,
man?
Matt?
Oh, man. Oh, gosh. Well, can't believe, John, that it has been, it's 100 episodes. Amazing.
Yeah. 100 episodes is, wow, it's flown by. It's pretty crazy.
It really has. And in like the best way, too, because, you know, I feel like it doesn't even feel like it's been that long for us doing this, but I have so much fun doing it that I can't wait for another 100 episodes, honestly.
Yeah, you know, it's, I was actually looking back through our back catalog recently, you know, just as we were prepping for this, and I was just like, wow, you know, we've done some crazy topics, and I have a good feeling that we are going to be coming up with crazy topics for quite some time through the future.
Yeah, I do too.
I got a good feeling. I'm really, you know, I am up on Star Wars. I know that there's been a lot of fan, you know, back and forth, and people have been talking about, you know, but you know what? We've always been positive. We're going to stay positive. We're going to be honest, but. You know, I honestly feel like I'm in a good place right now.
Yeah, I really do. I feel like I am too. You know, and part of it, I think that no matter what has come at us, you know, from Star Wars, honestly, it's been the friendship that we have together and the fun that we have, and honestly, this show keeps my love for Star Wars strong. And it's because, you know, no matter what happens in it, we have a great time getting to discuss the depth and the breadth of that. And, you know, that's what's so exciting. And what's been really great is people really responding, John, to our call for reviews over on iTunes. And people seem to be, you know, liking what we're doing here. So we're going to celebrate 100 episodes, got a couple new reviews. And actually, you know, as of the recording of this show, we only need one more review to do the drawing to see who wins the book or the comic of their choice from Amazon, $15 or under. Pete from Portland, somebody up in my area of the country, said, "A podcast for a more civilized age." 5 stars. They said, "This is a great Star Wars podcast, which isn't afraid to pull punches, but also shows an amazing respect for the source material. Looking forward to more amazing shows." Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, we do. We very much appreciate that. It's been, like we were just saying, it's been a fast journey to 100, and we're having a lot of fun with this, and we will continue having a lot of fun with this. And the other review we got in is from Gary4278. It says, "Good job." It's a 5-star. It says, "Matt and John provide great podcasts, and the Star Wars podcast is awesome." Meaning Gary listens to other shows that we're on. So thank you, Gary. And it says, "The shows are thoughtful and intelligent and a lot of fun. I appreciate their hard work and dedication to this podcast. Keep up the good work, guys, and thanks for giving us a wonderful platform to come together as Star Wars fans." And there you go. That's exactly what we want, and that's exactly, you know, thank you for saying that that's what we've done. So thanks, everybody. Really appreciate these reviews very much.
Yeah, so still time to enter. So go ahead and get your review in. Now, you know what the great thing is even if you aren't involved in this drawing, with the 1 in 10 shot, We're going to keep doing it. So even if you miss this one, you could be entered into the next one. So don't worry. You'll still have your chance to win a book or comic of your choice. You know.
Oh, and I do want to say, free to anyone if they want is just let me know or Matt know. And we're happy to record voicemail messages as Jar Jar for you.
Yes, so, yes.
Just let us know.
There you go. We can absolutely do that for you. Yes. But hey, just a quick reminder before we tell you what we're going to be doing to celebrate 100 episodes. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. That's the entire network. And if you want to know specifically what's going on with Aggressive Negotiations, you can follow at the Jedi Masters. We tweet all sorts of great things Star Wars-wise, related, the course about the show, and everything else. So make sure you're following us there. Also, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. You can find our shows there. We post the shows. It's a great place to interact with John and I about what you thought about the episode. Of course, you can also find us on the internet at thenerdparty.com. And if you'd like to send us an email, go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose Aggressive Negotiations, and that email comes to John and I. And, you know, last but not least, make sure you hit us up with a star rating review in iTunes. But if you're not an Apple user, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. So, John, we wanted to celebrate 100 episodes specially.
And yes,
especially very much wanted so. To celebrate specially. So we're going to do something I think is really cool. We're going to do a 3-part commentary on the Mortis arc, and we're going to do that a little bit differently than most. We're not going to just watch it all straight through. We're going to kind of break it up into 3 chunks. So that you'll have the opportunity, if you need to stop because the episode's a little bit longer than normal, and just you know, start up again, you'll have a good place to be able to do that. So each episode we'll commentate on, and then we'll talk a little bit about that episode, and then we'll give you another countdown, and we'll dive into the next episode. So that way it kind of breaks it up for you a little bit, but just something kind of different and fun. And if you like this, I mean, gosh, we've got 6 seasons of the Clone Wars, John, that we could do this through.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we definitely could, and we definitely, yeah. The Clone Wars, if you're new to the show, this is news to you, but anybody that's been listening for a while, you know our love for the Clone Wars. It is a show that, I mean, unparalleled. It is in my top 5, probably, of television shows I've ever watched. And even taking the Star Wars stuff out of it, I mean, that helps, of course, but, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But yes, the Mortis arc, I'm dying to do this. This is, we're going to have act breaks. It's going to be like going to a play. We're going to give you intermissions. So, yeah. Let's buckle in and let's get a Mortis, man.
All right, man. Well, so we've both got our Netflix pulled up here, and John and I are going to give each other a countdown.
We are, but just so people can play along, we're starting the Clone Wars. If you're streaming on Netflix or if you have your disc collection or whatever, Season 3, Episode 15, Overlords. And just, you know, so you know, the way we do, you know, commentaries is you don't have to have it playing necessarily. This is something you're going to be able to listen to in your car, too. Trust us.
Yeah, definitely. And plus, I think one of the other things that'll allow that to happen is we will talk about that episode specifically after the episode ends. So we'll talk a little bit more in depth and then dive into the next episode, and then we'll get to build as we keep going. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But if everybody is ready, I shall give us a countdown. 3, 2, 1, play.
All right. The Clone Wars, still love you. Just hearing, you know, I was actually at Disney Springs recently because, I live nearby, and there were, you know, they had their Star Wars store, The Rebel Balance is Found in the One Who Faces His Guilt. What a great tagline, you know, for this episode.
It's so interesting. But the balance is found with the one who faces his guilt. And so, man, what a poignant point right there about Anakin.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, very much so. But to close out the thought about Disney Springs, just with the opening of the Clone Wars, I was in their Star Wars store, and you know, they're playing, you know, different music and everything. And at one point, the Clone Wars version of the theme struck
awesome.
Up. And I think I was the only person in the entire store were like perked up. And I was like, Clone Wars. And like everybody else is like, what? Why is the crazy bald man talking? I was like, what is this? Never mind. So,
well, I love too that this message that they're going to check out hasn't been used by the Jedi in over 2,000 years.
Yes, meaning it predates even the last time that a war broke out in the Republic.
Yes.
So, you know, that's a pretty long time ago. But I mean, that even in and of itself speaks to, because I remember when Attack of the Clones came out, when people talked, you know, they were talking about, you know, Palpatine, you know, talks about for 1,000 years, but Obi-Wan said for 1,000 generations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, is a year a generation and on a galactic scale and everything. But like, if it hasn't been used in 2,000 years, that immediately speaks to the idea that the Jedi predate the Republic,
right,
as it were.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very important point that can get lost in the shuffle sometimes. I think people so innately tie the Jedi and the Republic together because that's where they are when we meet them in episode one.
Yep.
That they forget that there was a time where the Jedi existed outside mm-hmm. of that. And speaking of outside.
Yeah. I absolutely yeah. love the way that this diamond kind of opens in the middle and like,
yes,
it allows them into this alternate part of the universe. And in fact, I was watching quickly the little featurettes that they did and that are still on CloneWars.com, and Dave said, just kind of think about these episodes as happening almost in the same type of place as the cave on Dagobah. Like everything
right.
is meant to be, you know, something that's an allusion to, or, you know, it's heady. And I love that we're just kind of in, we spend three episodes basically in that same type of framework that, you know, Luke has his,
right.
you know, cave experience. It's great.
Well, the greatest thing too in this episode is when they do cross over and the white light and everything, it's actually reminiscent to me. And I've always wondered if it's a callback to the original Battlestar Galactica series.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's an episode where Starbuck goes in and there's like this weird crystalline thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes in, and there's a big white light and everybody's dressed like angels and stuff like that. And so I've always wondered if that's a callback. Maybe somebody with more knowledge could tip us off. But if not, it's a happy coincidence. But I would love it if it were a callback. So, yeah.
Well, and I love and that they use this opportunity to just go completely crazy with the animation and everything here by doing this kind of like Pandora type look, you know,
right.
with the rocks floating and everything. And you just get this sense that you're in, I mean, you don't even know where you are. This completely new place for Star Wars. And then, of course, meeting the daughter here is a huge shocker because, like, you've never seen anything like her before, except maybe the Angels of Iago.
Right, right. And I think that the what's really interesting, too, is one of the things I always loved about Clone Wars was the distinction in automatic reactions from characters.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is you see in even these little moments, the core differences between Anakin and Obi-Wan and Ahsoka, of course.
Yeah.
Like it's so easy to distinguish their characters. They're complex characters. They're fascinating characters. But like any other person, you can get a read off of them from how they react in certain specific types of situations. And there's always like this furrowed brow of suspicion and alert. And there's this curiosity in Ahsoka, and Obi-Wan's always the one that like he very much has the go with the flow sort of
right
way of things. It's like, yeah, you know, this is, you know, I just love that about things. You know, he's be wary, and Anakin's the impetuous, like, what's going on? Tell me the answer. I got to know right now sort of situation.
Well, and I think it's so interesting, too, is she's explaining the father as they're walking here. And, you know, they're all having their different reactions to what she's saying, as you said. And the whole idea of, like, she says the father, who they're like, who is he? And you're like, well, he's the beginning and the end. You know, basically he's the Alpha and the Omega, apparently.
Yeah.
And the I Ching, I guess, of this planet, like the thing it revolves around.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting, too, because you see even here, Anakin's first instinct is jump forward, protect, mm-hmm. control, and the sister's reaction is, it's forbidden for you to touch me. And so, even there, you see what's Anakin's first go-to is to, I want to be the hero. And it's a tiny moment, but I think also what's very clever about this is that Anakin winds up being the gateway character, the introduction character for everything when he's having the reaction that I think that a lot of people can relate to, where with what you just said, he's the beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega, all of this stuff. And Anakin's like, oh, I'm glad you cleared that one up for us. That's a very, he's giving an in to the audience, I think, in that moment.
Well, and the thing I love about this episode too is this, it sets us here in this place. We don't even know what it's called yet. And it is bonkers. The fact that this planet is changing, mm-hmm. As the sun goes down, it seems to change seasons. And now, of course, Obi-Wan and Ahsoka, who are separated from Anakin, have run into somebody who looks not quite as nice as the daughter.
Yeah, and when night falls and they say everything is dying, what I noticed this time watching it, and I remember what a mind F moment it was when he waved his hand and the lightsabers turned off.
Yes.
That's just yet another thing. I honestly credit Mortis as being a real gear shift moment for how I regarded the Clone Wars series. I loved it from the beginning.
Yeah, me too.
But this was the one where I was like, wow, they're really willing to get weird with it here. Like, really strange. The idea of encountering somebody who is able to turn off somebody else's lightsaber is crazy. Like, I mean, I remember my reaction. I still have the same reaction now where it's like, what? No, that's a lightsaber. Like, it very much plays on that childhood fascination we've always had with the lightsaber.
What it immediately lets you know, too, in this series and in this episode, that like where we are and what's going on here is beyond the Jedi. Their feeble powers are no match for what we are facing right now. So I also love this whole scene where Anakin meets the father for the first time, and the beautiful symmetry of the way everything's mm-hmm. laid out. The balance of it all. I really feel like the design work for Mortis is just fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I love the fact that Anakin, when he sees the father, he sits down. There's very much, I think, a call back to the old Kung Fu movies and stuff like that of, he sees the master, and even though he has all these questions and everything, he sits down, as the kids say, crisscross applesauce, and sits there like a student approaching a master. Mm-hmm. Like, there's an immediate acquiescence on his part.
Yeah.
Which we don't typically see from Anakin.
No. Of course, he quickly gets frustrated and he was like, tell me what's going on here, old man.
Right.
So it's like, well, I guess that only lasts so long.
Yeah, and this dream sequence that we're witnessing in this episode, I think, is really super fascinating, specifically because, again, this is new territory.
Yes.
Like, look, I know we said you don't have to be watching the show, but we're at the moment where Qui-Gon appears.
Yes.
Voiced by Liam Neeson. After sort of like a legendary absence from the saga. And I can say hands down that this was the most validating, wonderful moment of like this whole episode is just moment after moment. But Qui-Gon showing up felt like a warm hug to me. It still does, because my affinity for Qui-Gon.
Oh,
I love Qui-Gon. Qui-Gon's one of my favorite characters. And to have him come back like this was I was so grateful for this moment because it really brought everything together for me. And to have Liam Neeson's voice, I remember at the time asking online, I think from Bonnie Girl, but I never got an answer because obviously it wasn't going to come to pass. But I was like, does this mean if Liam Neeson came back that he's going to record his missing segment from episode 3? And of course he didn't, but
you know, and what I find fascinating about that whole scene too, is that we see him say that we will find out if Anakin is the chosen one by his choices here. And so I guess the answer to the question is that he's not, because he chooses not to be the chosen one, the one to bring balance, the one to take the place of the father.
Well, I think it very much speaks to the thing that we go back and forth about, and a lot of people go back and forth about, especially with the original six, is destiny versus free will. What's the balance in them? And I think that this very much gets to the idea of Anakin has a destiny, and his choices are going to determine how that road is traveled. And I can also tell you that what I think is very telling, something I'm thinking about as we're, you know, watching this and discussing it, is Anakin's visions, his vision in Attack of the Clones, even his vision in Revenge of the Sith, where he sees Padme, everything comes to Anakin in nightmares. And this moment with his mother comes to him as a nightmare.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting, because it's nighttime and nightmares that tie to Anakin. And I can only think now that that's definitely on purpose. That there's, you know, like that's, if that's the only time we see this character having a vision, a substantial vision like this.
Well, and the beautiful thing of this, about this, is we got the same woman who played her in Attack of the Clones.
Yes.
And of course, Revenge of the Sith.
Phantom Menace. Yeah.
Attack of the Clones and episode 1 is here. It's just awesome. So the fact that they were able to get her back was
the great Pernilla August was her name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll never forget with her accent. I remember her recounting the story at Celebration 1 and then on, you know, later bonus materials and everything, where, you know, she said, well, I have a Swedish accent. And Lucas is, you know, and she was asking Lucas, well, how are you going to reconcile that? And Lucas's response was simply, yeah, you're from a Swedish part of the galaxy.
Yeah.
Like, I love the fact that the accent meant nothing to him. Where he's like, who cares if you have an accent? Whatever. He's like, you're the right actress for the job. I'm fine with that.
I love this whole scene where Ahsoka sees her older self.
Yes.
And the danger that her master could be to him, to her, and the fact that, you know, I almost wonder if that helps in her decision at all when she decides to leave the order. And
that's a good point. That's a good point.
She feels betrayed there, but also maybe there's some part of that warning from her older self that realizes, you know what, maybe this is just the right time for me to leave.
Yeah, and Anakin jumping to conclusions. And the father saying striking down an unarmed man is hardly the Jedi way. There you go. There's the foreshadowing of what he's going to do with Dooku, an unarmed man, literally unarmed.
I love when he grabs the lightsaber.
And just pushes
it back in. It's just amazing.
Again, reinforcing the idea that these weapons that all of us have come to accept as like this all-powerful sort of thing, it's nothing. And the thing is, it's so tempting, I think, sometimes for people to look at Clone Wars, especially people who aren't particular fans, and look at it and say, oh, well, it's a cartoon, and sort of dismiss it that way. But look at the beauty in just these shots where Anakin's talking to the father, the lighting. I mean, this is true, like, cinematography here.
Yep.
If I saw something like this, I mean, I've been rewatching Tarantino's movies, and he works with, Robert Richardson, I think is his name. Well, anyway, who also has worked with Oliver Stone and stuff like that. And the overhead lighting, severe in certain points, really has that type of feel to it. There's like real cinematography going on in this. And so I think that that is another thing that just, even as a film fan at a basic level, subtracting the Star Wars-ness of it all, I mean, this is beautiful composition and, mm-hmm. and photography.
Well, and I think it's, what's so cool too is it's interesting. One, the father says to Anakin that few in the Jedi Order still know of their existence. And the fact that they're here because this is the place where he can control his children, where, you know, destruction leads to creation. It's basically the circle of life happening here. And it, what happens here basically affects the rest of the universe. And it's what keeps the things in balance in the universe. So this whole idea of that this is a nexus point, because Qui-Gon even said earlier when they were having their conversation, him and Obi-Wan, that this is a place where the Force flows in and out of completely to the rest of the galaxy. So, like, this is one of the most important places in the galaxy, wherever in the galaxy this actually is, since it's kind of there and not at the same time. It's in that spiritual plane, basically.
Yeah. And I think there's also a real wonder to, you saw you see the destruction when the sun shows up, and then when the next day breaks, that Genesis wave effect of everything coming. Mm-hmm. And what I think is amazing and beautiful about that moment when everything restores to life is that Obi-Wan and Ahsoka are walking through just like it's another day. Like,
yeah,
they've figured it out.
Just another day in the galaxy for us.
Right. They figured it out. And I love the fact that they're the ones that when they're, you know, they're in this weird situation, but they've kind of figured it out. Then they're just calm about it. They're like, oh, okay, I know how this place works. All right, cool. You know, like it's, like you said, it's another day in the galaxy. It's just another, and which I think Lucas himself said about the opening of Attack of the Clones, where he wanted it just to show another day in the life of these two Jedi is just crazy heroics. You know, it gets the audience immediately to it. And this is just their life.
Well, and I think it's also, you know, the thing about them where they are okay with not being in control, Ahsoka and Obi-Wan, but Anakin here is struggling with not feeling in control or understanding what's going on. And so I think that's a really fascinating thing to watch happen. And of course, now he has this choice that the father's making him is like, which one are you going to save? Are you going to save Obi-Wan? Are you going to save Ahsoka? Who is it?
And also, even though they're in this weird place, and even though Anakin is his own Jedi, Obi-Wan is still providing him guidance.
Yeah.
When Anakin has his crucible moment here, Obi-Wan is the one that says, this place is the Force. Use it. It's Obi-Wan is injecting faith into him in a sense, where he's like, I know who you are. Even if you don't know who you are, I know who you are. You can make this happen. I think that's an amazing thing.
Well, and I think that I like what you just said, because it's one of the places where I think it does show the fact that Obi-Wan was always striving to teach Anakin as best he could, you know, like and he even had that conversation with Qui-Gon about how hard it is to teach Anakin. You know, and, mm-hmm. and that there's still so much he still has to learn, but his goal was always to try and make him the best person, best man, best Jedi that he could be. In moments like this, you know, it's cool to watch him actually listen to Obi-Wan, you know, like he uses the Force and makes them bow before him, kneel mm-hmm. before Anakin.
Well, yeah, but no, I'm glad you said kneel before Anakin, because again, here in this moment, And if anybody's not watching, what, you know, he just made the son and the daughter, the embodiment of light and dark, like land. And he said, but he says on your knees, which is a big thing about Vader. You kneel to me. I control you. I rule you. And so even though he, you know, he passes this test, you see what a tremendously easy thing it is to corrupt a gift.
Yeah.
You know, he it is his choices that will determine whether it's, you know, a good or a bad thing that he has this power.
It's so interesting. And his attachment to the material. As we're talking about control, and I mean, if Anakin, you know, wants complete control, this is the place to do it, where he will exert control over the light and the dark, you know, for as long as possible, really.
But this is Anakin, his attachment to the material, to his personal desires. There's a very Buddhist sort of thing going on here. Yep. Where in light, he achieves technically enlightenment, and he refuses it and says, no, I want what I have.
Yeah.
I don't want the next thing. And wow. And I mean, think about this. We're already at the end of the episode. You know, like,
it's
what?
Crazy.
You know, how does it go that fast? And that's just 30 minutes of the Clone Wars. 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, 20 whatever
like
minutes.
But, 22 like, minutes or 23 minutes or whatever.
But a half an hour. All of the depth, all of the conversations that could still be happening just on this one episode, and it's not even the full arc of Mortis. How crazy is that?
The thing that I think is so interesting about this first episode is the way that it completely changes our idea of how big the idea of the Force is in the Star Wars universe. You know, that it's something so beyond just the Jedi and the Sith, you know, and that Lucas really challenges our preconceptions that we've had built around this idea to say, no, this is the it of the Star Wars galaxy. These two things, light and dark, this is it.
And I think that, and I know I'm getting into dangerous territory here, but I think that that is one of the missteps that happens in Last Jedi. Is it's one thing to have Mortis and have this sort of like meta, I guess, thing where it's like you have this whole other reality that's sitting on top of reality, and this is a doorway through which you stepped. But Last Jedi wants this sort of scale and power within the material realm, as opposed to taking it and putting in this spiritual realm, if you will, this energy, this pure force life, I think provides that sort of scope and scale that they were going for with the thematics in Last Jedi of, you know, there's a bigger fight going on. There's, you know, a larger arc. There's, you know, our war isn't all that there is. So that's definitely one of the themes that's, you know, they're going for in The Last Jedi. But here it works on, I think, a better level, specifically because it takes our heroes outside. It doesn't diminish what they're going through on the galactic level, because
right,
what happens there pertains to there. And when they are here in Mortis, what happens in Mortis pertains to Mortis. How are the two connected is the philosophical argument that you and I are having back and forth about it, mm-hmm. You know?
The thing that I think is so powerful about this first episode, too, is the way that it kind of sets the stage for cool things that we'll see, you know, in, you know, we obviously saw the Bendu, you know, in Rebels. So these other beings out there that and what was neat is just like this opening up idea of other views of the Force. We saw the Lasats had their view. We've seen Guardians of the Night Sisters in one. So I mean these ideas that the Force is all encompassing for the galaxy and very important. And what I think is so neat in this whole thing, and what I love about Star Wars, is that it says there is not just a material side to the world, there is a spiritual side.
Well, and I think also speaking to your point, and this is a part of Catholic philosophy, is that it's the recognition that there's one truth, okay? So there's the Force, right? Mm-hmm. But then even if you take the Guardians of the Wills and their belief structure and you put it up against the Jedi, or you put it up against the Knights, you put it up against anything, you see... So long as it's a, you know, something talking about, you know, the underlying truth, you see the grain of truth in all of it.
Right.
So the Guardians of the Wills are not invalid because they're not the Jedi, and the Jedi are not more valid because they're not the Lasat. It's that each culture has encountered the one truth in a different way. And so there may be, in fact, a path, like the one giant path, but there's a possibility that there are others there who are on parallel paths or branching paths, and so everybody should be working together to get back to the Force, the mortis of it all.
I think what's really fascinating to me was the fact that George was willing to do this in the first place. Like he was willing to take this risk with his creation and tell us something this big in a animated show for
but
kids,
I think it gets
right, like that
yeah.
he felt like that this was something, when it came to telling stories about Star Wars and the way they were going to do it in the Clone Wars, that this was needed, like this needed to happen. And I think that's fascinating to me.
But see, I get back to the idea that he is a true, pure storyteller. And, you know, he's not the only one. There are obviously other ones there, too. But, like, he wasn't just engaging in storytelling because he wanted to make a movie. He was engaging in storytelling because he was trying to communicate deep philosophical ideas and concepts. And so I think Mortis gets back to, I think he feels a freedom. And I think that the whole reason mentally I view this as sort of a gear shift moment for me in the Clone Wars, and the reason that I think that it is because I think you see a relax. This is going to be a really weird way to phrase it, but a relaxation back to his roots, the THX side of him. The idea that, you know, I was going to be real weird with it originally. And you know what? I can do that now. I don't have, you know, I made the rules. I can change the rules. I can change how I'm going to tell this to people. And that, I think, makes Mortis so incredible, is it steps back to, and we're going to see an echo of this with the Yoda stuff in the sixth season.
Yep.
The willingness to go in and be like, you know, this is actually where my brain is.
Yep.
You know, like, I sort of slowed it down for y'all, but I think you can handle this now. You know, like, it, and that is what is just so cool, man. Like, I know that you're
talking about that, because I think you're absolutely right. I think that this is one of the places where George kind of did the Tolkien thing in a lot of ways, where it's like he really just took the deep dive and allowed himself to completely fully explore his universe, because you couldn't do that when you're making a film. But you can do this kind of thing when you're exploring it in television. And again, what I also think is fascinating and phenomenal is that, you know, Star Wars is for kids, right? But George doesn't dumb down ideas for the kids. And I think he doesn't speak down to kids.
And I think that gets back to the true storyteller part of him as well. And I say this to my own wife sometimes, because, you know, I'm a dad and everything, and, you know, we're parents, and every so often there's a moment where, you know, I'll show something that she thinks might be a little bit, you know, too much for the kids or something like that. And I've said this to her, I've said this to other people. A bedtime story used to be Beowulf for kids. They used to listen to Beowulf when they were going to bed. Okay? Kids and people in general, and I truly believe this, they are as intelligent and as with it and as wise as you're going to let them be.
Mm-hmm.
If you slow things down and you dumb it down, people will slow down. But if you keep it, if you say to them, keep up, I think that there's a spark in people where they will keep up.
Yep.
They will try to keep up with you. And so to speak to your point, I think this is exactly the type of show a kid should be watching because of the fact that it's a philosophical show and it's asking them to think about things that they're going to need to think about when they get to be adults. When you're given a difficult choice, what are you going to do? What's it going to say about you when you're faced with a difficult choice? Save Ahsoka, save Obi-Wan, right? Are you going to try to save them both? Are you going to try to save one? What's your default setting?
Yep.
And I think that's an important question to ask kids. When you see that other kid who's having a hard time, who's being bullied, who anything like that, this is important stuff, really important stuff.
No, absolutely. I mean, and I love that you pulled that out because I think that's something that we just don't think about necessarily. But the idea, and I think this is what George always wanted, was for parents to sit down and watch this stuff with their kids and have those conversations, you know? And as they got older, the conversations would change, right? You know, they wouldn't always be exactly the same conversation because as a kid gets older, they're going to understand more. And that's what's so awesome about this arc, I think, because it gives those opportunities to have those conversations with your kids. But, man, for us as fans, it blew our minds as to what we were able to talk about with the Star Wars galaxy, because this is mind altering, galaxy changing arc for Star Wars. Hands down, probably I would say this may be the most life altering arc of Star Wars whatsoever. Like there, I don't know if it gets any bigger than this.
I agree. So let's plug forward. This is the end of your intermission. We're about to start the second episode. If you're keeping up and you're watching, so this would be the second episode in the Mortis arc, season 3, episode 16, Altar of Mortis. And so I'll be the one to give you the countdown this time. And so we're going to go with the countdown. We're going to go 3, 2, 1, start.
All right.
And we got that beautiful Clone Wars beginning going again. So
I really do. I remember seeing this in the theater for the first time, you know, and I just loved the music. I loved the way that they had mixed the John Williams feel to give it that. I mean, this is fully the serial that George always loved, right? You know, the music is vibrant and like, it's just so good.
And I think that also the reworking of the theme, having the drums in it, the way that the drums are, gives it that war feel. It gives it that underlying march feel that is always kind of there, but really teases out the idea that this is a more wartime setting. So, and you know, and the thing is, one of the tough things that I had to come to terms with when I saw the Clone Wars movie in the movie theater was the way that they did the opening with the recap. You know, this is where we are in the galaxy. I was like, oh, that's weird. But I came to love it so much. It's such an easy in.
Oh, me too.
And speaking of an easy in, again, when does the vision come to Anakin? In a nightmare.
Yeah, you know? I liked it. I really like that you pulled on that idea. I think it is a really strong idea.
And here he is walking on water. What another messianic image can you possibly have for a character in a series than walking on water? That's a really easy to understand one, you know? And then to have it turn into, I mean, you know, the sun. Voiced by, we should point out,
the amazing Sam Witwer,
who also did the resurrected Darth Maul. And rumor has it can do an incredible Palpatine.
Yes, so, I've heard him do it on another podcast, and it is phenomenal.
And just to call out the design here, you see the design of the sun come back in a way in the Grand Inquisitor in Rebels Season 1. But also something that I really key on while we're watching it this time is if you notice the red on his cheeks, they look like tears.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't really thought about that until now, which is really interesting. And I wish that there was... Is there an action figure for the sun? Because if there were, it really belongs in the Batcave.
It does. I'm going to have to look to see if they did.
I just
love
I don't
remember... way that the sun... you know, gets Anakin is to steal Ahsoka. It's like he knows
this is
the way to get to this guy.
Right. Yes, exactly. Which again echoes or pre-shadows, I guess, by this point in the story, the idea of what Palpatine uses to get Anakin to do what he wants.
Yeah, absolutely.
How are you going to save your wife, right? Yeah, well, yes. You know, like... And so we see all of these clever foreshadowings that are echoes because we're seeing it after the fact. It's just so, that's so crazy awesome. It really is. And I love this shuttle. See, you know what? I want to talk about the toys here because I think that the toys were really missing huge opportunities with the Clone Wars because as you know, as anybody should know, they needed more toys from the Clone Wars, and now I'm going to gear shift again because we're at a point in the episode. Is it just me, or does the tower they just steered around, which leads to their crash,
look a lot like Mordor?
Yes. Mordor, I was going to say it also, I could see Orthanc in it.
Yep.
I could see all of these things. It looks very Tolkien. And I think that ties into something you've pointed out, that Filoni really loves to have allusions to Tolkien and things. So I imagine that Lucas did too. So this is like a shared love of theirs that
well,
works.
Well, and that's
in.
Interesting too, because you think, I wonder if anywhere this idea came in for Lucas, because, you know, the Valar are those beings that, you know, help create, you know, Iluvatar is the ultimate. And he creates the Valar, and you know, so in a lot of ways, the father feels like the creator in Middle Earth, who started the song, and Melkor was the, you know, the discordant one, which would equal the sun here, and so very interesting idea that kind of fits within the Star Wars universe too. And I think what it shows is how well done Lucas in his research of, you know, the different mythologies that he's pulling from, and how they really do flow together to create something. And that's why Star Wars is something that I think stands above a lot of other works, is because it is so archetypal that you can really... Mm-hmm. see all of these different things, and it feels so familiar, but it is its own thing, and so that's what makes it so special.
Yeah, and you have this imp creature talking to Ahsoka, who of course could also be an allusion to, you know, like a Gollum callback sort of thing. But something else that I find very interesting is that there is a material design to the places that they go. This tower, the cathedral where the father is, that very much, there's very much a feel like Geonosis in the lighting, and like the chamber where Obi-Wan is held. But there's also a question here, like a strange, like, is this an allusion to the fact that you can see here stuff that you'll later recognize as Imperial design? You know, that there's so, like it's a specific callback to the idea that the design of places speaks to the type of place that it is. And so when you're on an Imperial ship, that's why it looks a certain way versus a Rebel ship looks a certain way. And, you know, maybe I'm trying too hard to tease something out here, but I don't know. I think it's an echo that's there. And of course, Obi-Wan looks up and sees the light. And I guess this would be Minas Tirith if we're going to tease out all of those things where the father is.
What I think is interesting, too, is that the son is starting to grow stronger. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that has to do with Anakin being here and his imbalance growing stronger. And so the son, mm-hmm. because Anakin is here, feels that strength. I wonder if that has something to do with it.
I think so. I think another way to read it, possibly, is that the son is growing stronger because of the war and the strife and the discord. So his growing stronger, again, presages the growth of the dark side in the galaxy itself, you know? And, of course, we get Force lightning at the point that we're at, which is always fun to see. Everybody loves Force lightning.
You know, what's interesting, but too, this also echoes what we'll see it in Revenge of the Sith, where Anakin turns on Obi-Wan and basically says, I hate you. Everything that you've become, I hate who you are, you know. And the son is very reminiscent of, you know, what we'll get, the rage that Anakin feels, you know, when he says Palpatine is evil. And he says, well, from my point of view, the Jedi are evil. You know, it's like they're complete opposite sides at that point.
And I still get goosebumps every time I watch Revenge of the Sith and Obi-Wan, you know, replies, well, then you are lost, because mm-hmm. that is the moment. And I think because I always talk about the novelization of episode 3, where that's the moment where in the novelization they tease out Obi-Wan realizes the problem is that he still loved Anakin and he had to stop loving him if he was going to take care of this problem. But I think that there's also a real sense of puzzlement with me as to what it would take to get something like this in our lives again for Star Wars. I mean, that I think is probably the most difficult thing for me in the Disney franchise era.
Yeah, is absolutely.
1 through 6, you know, they're made 4 through 6 and then 1 through 3, and they get weirder and they get a little more abstract as they go along, and they get a little bit broader and they get a little bit more philosophically heavy. And then you get Clone Wars, where there's even more relaxation of that. And it's like, yeah, we're going to get really crazy with this. And here's Mortis. Here's an absolute, you know, the sister has brought, you know, Obi-Wan to this strange place with like the blue flames you see in Dracula, but it's like an M.C. Escher painting of a cave.
Dave said, you know, in the extras, he said this was a Wagnerian feel to it, like with, you know, these flames and this, you know, you're descending down and, you know, this blade just appearing. And I think it's interesting too is that, you know, Obi-Wan has to talk the daughter into helping, because she says that she's not supposed to interfere in the ways of the Force.
Right.
And I think that that's very much the ultimate version of the light side of the Force, the fact that they would never interfere. But I think it almost seems like the daughter had forgotten that she is to follow the will of the Force, not just like, you know, like there's that whole thing like of predestination. If everything's just the will of the Force, then I don't have to do anything. But no, you know what I'm saying? You have a responsibility. Like, she has a responsibility. Mm-hmm. She's to keep the balance with her brother. And so I just think it's interesting that it's Obi-Wan who's talking her into that process. And of course, you know, you've got Anakin on the other side just negating his responsibility completely to being the chosen one here. And I think it's just very interesting to see the two of them. And as you were talking about in the first episode, you really have those differences between these two characters. Obi-Wan is bound by duty in the honor of the code of being the Jedi to always try to do the right thing. And Anakin is bound to the duty of himself to always do what he wants to do.
He wants, you know, it almost gets back to sort of that that back and forth between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan in the beginning of episode one. And it's like, but not at the expense of the moment. Like, Qui-Gon's very much an in the moment, but there's more of an appreciation for honoring all of the aspects of it. But I wanted to ask you, because the scene that we are at right now, if you're not watching or if you are, whatever, Ahsoka's fighting Anakin, which was crazy to me when I watched it. But something I noticed this time is there's a tree by her. Okay. And we know that there is a tree. There are trees in that one series that takes place immediately after Return of the Jedi. Luke saves the two Force trees.
Right.
And then there's the tree.
Those trees came from the trees that were at the temple.
Right. And the tree on the Jedi Island, tree, and the magic tree on Dagobah, trees figure huge as points of the Force. And I think that what's fascinating about that is the dark side, of course, as we see it in the material world, is all about technology dominating nature. But is that tree a symbol that there has to be something living? There has to be something living to make it work. And I think that would have been so interesting for them to explore in the sequel trilogy, is to have a resurgent empire with no Force users on its side. Or maybe only Ben is on its side or something like that.
Yeah.
And it would be devoid of any nature, because the empire we see is devoid of nature. You know, we never see the empire with like trees on court, you know, do we? I don't think so.
Well, and I like the idea that these trees, like you're saying, like they have such a connection with the Force, you know, like the Force is all living things. And I think that's really, I love that idea of that we have these trees because, maybe they even come from seeds from trees on, you know, a Mortis type planet thousands of years ago. And that's why the first Jedi Temple, you know, had a tree that was its library.
And the thing is, why wouldn't this occur to me before? You have tree biblically, the tree of life, the tree of knowledge. You have the tree of knowledge. And so trees do figure, I mean, you know, and gosh, let's get back to the Tolkien thing. You have, you know, you have the Ents and Fangorn Forest figuring so big into the Lord of the Rings and everything like that. It's,
I think this is interesting too, them fighting Ahsoka, who has been bitten by the sun, and the fact that she, it's almost as if it brings out any negative feeling she ever had and amplifies it 1,000%.
Yes. And meanwhile, you know what I'm thinking about? And I thought about this when he first grabbed it. The blade that Obi-Wan has that the sister gave to him, doesn't it look awfully Darksaber-ish?
It does. It has a Darksaber feel to it, but it also has that, like, almost, I don't know, like, Bronze Age feel from our world, too. Like, something that's so ancient and, I see what you're saying, though. But it's interesting.
But could we see that as a visual tie to the ancient sort of knowledge that the Darksaber draws from?
Oh, could be.
And the fact that the sister is light. The sister is life. The sister is all of these positives, but she gives Obi-Wan a means to destroy the sun, and it's the one thing that looks wrong for her.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one thing that doesn't look like it should belong to her. And then, of course, the father showing up To end
nothing
the
like
argument.
A father backhanded slap to throw you out the window, you know?
Now, I would never advocate in any fashion striking children. You can ask my kids. I strictly hands off with that sort of thing. But if I were to witness one of my child harnessing force lightning and trying to destroy the other one,
yeah,
I might be forced to intervene in any manner possible. Yeah. So... And
so we talked about earlier, but I wonder if that the father is dying because of the imbalance of the force in the galaxy, too. Like,
sure,
you brought that up earlier, and I thought that was interesting. And I love that the son has bitten Ahsoka to be his partner to steal the sword so he can finally kill his father, because that's the only thing that can kill one of these. I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're the Celestials, basically, from the EU. These uber powerful beings, and so
yeah, and I think the thing is, this temptation of Ahsoka actually has a shadow of Palpatine and Anakin
about it.
You have the power to do the right thing or the wrong thing. Help me out here. And then when your usefulness is done, okay.
Yep.
Got nothing more to do
with
you.
Well, and you know, for her, it's interesting too, because Anakin will actually have that choice, you know. She doesn't really have that choice because he's kind of infested her,
mm-hmm.
you know, with dark side sickness. So...
Which, you know, you could, of course, see Anakin infested with dark side sickness in the, you know, in the manipulation. It's not quite so literal, but there's mm-hmm. a, you know, of course, a figurative infestation. And even the staging of the scene that we're watching right now, where the daughter dies and the father grabs her and they're there together. It again for me gets back to how this is beyond just an animated show. You know, this, the tree dying, the staging of everything has such a cinematic quality to it that it's just so breathtaking. The way Obi-Wan is standing behind Anakin and they don't feel the need to show Obi-Wan's face in every shot. You can just see him from the waist down, sort of thing. Also ties into the Lucas sensibility of the idea of the documentary camera.
Right.
Which was his big thing, that the camera's there.
The Clone Wars, like, they shoot it just like he would have, you know.
Right.
That's what made it feel like Star Wars. I love this, that Anakin is imploring, you know, the father to help Ahsoka, and he says, no, there's always hope. But I think what he's saying there is not that there's always hope, is that no, I will, like, this can't, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to get across the idea that Anakin is always in control.
Oh my gosh, yes, I agree, but my gosh, this moment that's going on right now that we're watching, where okay, first off, there's almost a Star Trek III sort of thing of the transfer of life essence from one body to another. But also, this thread very much gets picked up in Rebels with what happens to Ahsoka.
Yes.
This is the seed for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't... Wow.
Well, and see, this is the whole talked about, John. Like, this is the question. Like, if the father says that the light is gone... And he's talking about the war is going to get worse. That is, the Sith are going to gain strength, and is that imbalance in the family now? And the fact that what's going to happen by the end of this series, like, does that mean that we need a new family?
Yeah.
Have they still not been replaced yet?
And it gets to a theme that very much is important through all of Star Wars, and specifically Lucas, when he was in control of Star Wars, the idea of family, which you can trace back to not just his personal philosophy, which, you know, I'm not saying that dismissively, but the Westerns that inform Star Wars were always about restoration of the family, the family shot at the end, everybody together, everybody working together. And, you know, that's really, see, it's amazing to me. We've seen this arc before. We know this arc. And we're still having this conversation. And it's just amazing.
I feel like, you know, the whole question of, you know, if Ahsoka is alive, you know, and what happened to her after her fight with Vader. And I feel like that obviously it has to be this thread that we pick up on of that she has the essence, the life force now flowing through her is not just hers, but it's the daughter from Mortis. And so the ability to do something with that is just mind-blowingly awesome would be phenomenal. And it would be interesting to me. This would have been the most interesting thing, I think. What if instead of there being a father, she became the mother between a son and a daughter?
Fascinating.
Wouldn't that be interesting? That would be the switch in the galaxy. Think about this. So we've talked about how Padme dying, right, was the death of femininity, the death of all that was beautiful in the galaxy. And what if Ahsoka coming back and being the mother created that change in the galaxy of the beauty and the artistry and everything coming back in a way that it hadn't before until she took her place in the new Mortis?
Yeah, I can be down with that. And I can then say also that you could add an added layer to that with the sequel trilogy of Rey's ascendance and sort of the re-emphasis on the feminine coming to the forefront, then is reflected by the fact that it's Ahsoka who stepped into that place. Now, does that mean that if it doesn't happen that way, we're just entertaining possibilities?
Oh, we're just being great fans. I mean, well, we're just trying to be great fans at this moment, which is just talk about this
right
stuff.
No, but like, you know, talking about the possibilities of how you could tie stuff together and stuff like that, but also the fact that, again, this is something where you can, this is what I think the real entry point for you and me and people like us as Star Wars fans is, this is the philosophical sort of thing where if we bring Mortis into the conversation, you know, I always said when Last Jedi came out, regardless of whatever problems I might have had with it or anything like that, there is still a way, you know what, or even The Force Awakens, because I, you know, it took time for me to warm up to that one, is that everything that was laid before is so incredibly rich and dense that I can find the threads to pull those things in. And I think that's what has always elevated Star Wars above something like a Star Trek movie series, because those truly were just movies using characters that you knew. Whereas Star Wars has always been everything supporting, you know, something else. But on top of that, I still sit there, and in this episode of Mortis that we just watched, the son needs the ship to leave Mortis, and all I can think about is Star Trek V.
What is God the alien with a starship?
But think about this. Maybe we can make Star Trek V even cooler using Mortis by saying where they go is a Mortis type place, and the being they encounter is a sun type of sun type of entity. And therefore, like, how crazy is it that I can use the Altar of Mortis to legitimize Star Trek V finding a god planet at the center of the galaxy? It just happened. Star Wars just
love
helped
it.
Star Trek.
It makes complete sense to me.
This is what you call being an Uber fan, folks, where you can take an episode in 20-something minutes of The Clone Wars and you can look at Star Trek V, one of the most reviled franchise films in history, and find a way to have one support the other.
It's pretty awesome.
So there you go. Wow.
No, wow. I think you're absolutely right, though. That's actually kind of a interesting thought, you know, especially even with the whole Great Barrier and all that kind of stuff. That makes complete sense. But back to Star Wars.
Yes.
I think the thing that I love about this episode is that it took the crazy aspect and ratcheted it up again.
Yeah.
And I don't mean crazy in a bad way. I just mean like crazy, awesome, mind-blowing. I never would have thought that this is what we would be seeing in the Clone Wars. And think about this, too. Mm-hmm. I always think of this as being... In my brain, I always kind of think of this as being like a season 4 or 5, but this is season 3.
Yeah.
Like George just, again, I think you're completely correct in saying this is the gear shift for the Clone Wars where, I mean, what's amazing about this season 2 is that it's the Night Sisters arc, then this arc, mm-hmm. then the Citadel mm-hmm. arc, and then you wrap up with Ahsoka, you know, being stolen and thrown on the Trandoshan planet and where she meets Chewbacca. You know, like,
yeah.
That's the way this season ends, with, like, this just punch upon punch upon punch of awesome.
Yeah.
It's fantastic, and so I think... You're absolutely right. I do feel like here in season 3, mid-season 3, it's like they completely 100% just found the groove of the show and like that they could go for it and go for broke. And it works so wonderfully well. And I can't...
Yeah.
I'm really excited now that we're about to watch the last episode of the arc here, Ghosts of Mortis, so...
Yes. Season 3, episode 17, Ghosts of Mortis. You want to give us the countdown?
Yeah, let's do it. 3, 2, 1, punch it. Punch It is trademarked by Punch It from...
Listen to Punch It on the Nerd Party Network. He who seeks to control fate shall never find peace.
I wonder who they're talking about.
I got no idea. Who could that pertain to? I don't know. A charming lad, maybe named Anakin. I don't know. just throwing that out there, just spitballing, thinking.
So I do wonder, you know, the father wants Anakin to stay. But does he not sense that Anakin may not be stable enough to stay? Like... I wonder,
is it about the choice?
If Anakin made the choice to stay, then he would have been the right choice.
But at the same time, and we've had this constant discussion about who the chosen one is, the father on Mortis basically says, yep, it's Anakin. He's the chosen one. Does Anakin lose that mantle because of his choices here? Does he start as the chosen one? Is this the moment in time, or outside of time, depending on your point of view, where Anakin loses his destiny? Or, you know, and therefore sets it up for Luke to complete his destiny or something like that. As Ahsoka is working on the ship with goggles that make her look like Hondo.
Kind of awesome. Yeah, I also think it's funny that she's the one working on the ship when Anakin's the mechanical genius.
But see, that in and of itself, actually, I love specifically because it's, you know, the masters are the ones that are making the student work.
Yeah.
You know, the teachers are like, yeah, we've been through this before. You do it. You know, let us sit down and talk, you know.
I think it's interesting that... here, Anakin wants to go talk to the father because he doesn't feel like he can leave without his blessing. And I'm like, you already screwed the pooch, bro. You know, like,
yeah,
yeah. You really messed things up. But I will say, I feel that watching Mortis, that Anakin had lost his mantle as the Chosen One because of his choices here, and that he cemented his destiny to not be the Chosen One, in the sense of the full weight of what that could have meant. Now, does, you know, is he able to have some sort of redemptive power on the galaxy through his offspring and Luke, and the choice that Luke makes? You know, I think yes, yeah. But I think that the full weight maybe of the Chosen One gets lost because of the choice he makes here.
Yeah, I love, like, the father rolling the stone. Well, you know, I think again, it gets back to the idea that free will affects destiny. And I think that Anakin, you can always go back and forth, but my interpretation that I've sort of settled on is that Anakin is the Chosen One, and he does achieve his destiny, but because of his choices, he chooses the most painful way to do it. You can do things the easy way, or you can do things the hard way, and Anakin chooses to do things the hard way. But then, does Anakin choose to do things the hard way because the Jedi screw up and force him into a mold that he doesn't belong in? But at the same time, would Anakin have encountered the Father if not for being a Jedi?
Mm. I think the interesting thing here, too, and on that question, is that the Father tells Anakin that the choices that they've made here have unleashed a terrible power on the galaxy, and that the Father must kill the Son. And I think it's interesting because basically what he's saying is he's too dangerous to be kept alive.
Hmm.
And that's a valid argument.
Oh, and Qui-Gon comes back. Sorry. Just, I love.
And I love that the conversation that they're having, is he the Chosen One?
I believe you will bring balance to the Force, that you will face your demons and save the universe. And he does, but after a very long, unfortunate path.
Mm-hmm.
The path of redemption, which we talked about a couple episodes ago. So, yeah, you know, it's... you know, I find it interesting, too, because the vision of Qui-Gon comes and says, not far from here is a place, you know, strong in the dark side of the Force, which Yoda says to Luke. So again, we get another echo foreshadowing, an echoey foreshadowing of Luke and Anakin. The tone poem thing comes into play again. You know, I just, it's interesting. It's very interesting. And you know, while Ahsoka is fixing the ship, you know, Obi-Wan at least brings her a drink, but it's a real puzzler, because I think that the beautiful thing about the Chosen One question is that it can't be resolved. It's the ultimate philosophical question that Lucas throws at people who are, you know, watching the saga or anything like that, is, this is what a philosopher does, is they ask you a question that can't be answered. Can you hear a tree falling in the forest if no one is around? You know, does a tree falling in the forest make any sound? Yes. Prove it. How? I'm not there.
Yeah.
You know, I will record it. Well, that's like somebody being there. You can't possibly know, you know, whether there's this or that if you can't witness it. And yeah, and then, of course, Anakin going to find the place strong in the dark side of the Force.
Apparently, he's going to Dante's Inferno.
But he goes down a sinkhole that looks like Utapau, mm-hmm. which is in Episode 3, to an underground lava lair, which we know was originally supposed to be in Return of the Jedi as his personal, you know, place that he's going to take Anakin or take Luke to face the Emperor. But he's surrounded by lava. I mean, basically he gets there through Utapau to get to Mustafar,
Yeah.
Which is, there you go. Hey, episode 3 in a nutshell. And it's so, you know, here's another way to maybe take Last Jedi into the family is Anakin talking to the son, says, you murdered your sister. And the son is like, eh, I didn't hate her. You know, that's just a thing that happened, which is sort of how
she was just in the way.
But which is sort of the way that Kylo Ren talks about killing Han. You know, you killed Han Solo. I didn't. No, you hated him. I didn't hate him. I just killed him.
I think you're making a better argument for the fact that he's the son and she's the daughter. In a lot of ways.
You're right. And I remember watching the sequence that we're watching right now is the sun essentially tempting Anakin with the lava background, reminiscent of Mustafar, and saying, what if I could show you your future? I remember the ad for this show, and I remember watching this episode for the first time. This sequence, what an incredibly torturous burden to show Anakin what he's going to become.
You know, what's interesting, too, is that Yoda sees the same thing. Remember when he goes on his journey and he sees the future, what it's going to mean for the Jedi? And he accepts his future. He accepts that this will probably happen, right? But here, Anakin can't accept that he could be this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost like he has a Luke moment here too. Like he has Luke's cave moment where he sees what he could become.
Yeah.
You know, but he won't reject that.
You know, there's a thing here where Anakin sees these terrible things, and we see this foreshadowing. He sees a preview of his life, of things to come. And he is, you know, he's at a moment which is so layered. And and the son makes the exact same pitch to him that Palpatine does. We'll have peace if you go and do this terrible thing. And it is the ultimate philosophical and painful and awful sort of pitch to somebody. You know, the Machiavellian, the ends justify the means.
Yeah.
You'll save Padme if you go and slaughter all the Jedi.
Well, and here, the son, at least
you'll have peace.
At least Anakin's motivations are much purer in the sense. Like, it's not about Padme. It's about the entire galaxy. You know, because he's seeing the visions of the Emperor and everything, and he's saying, we could make sure that doesn't happen. We could bring peace. We can end conflict and war and strife in the galaxy.
But at the same time, he's seeing these things and he is he's trying to control them again.
Yes.
And trying to be more than he's supposed to be, and trying, you know, he is. And I, you know, and the thing is, you know what, I'm going to take a quick detour, because even though this series is called The Clone Wars, and Obi-Wan says, or Yoda says at the end of Attack of the Clones, begun the Clone Wars have, everybody has always said, Clone Wars, Clone War. You know, there's always been that question of plurality, and Anakin says Clone War in this moment when he confronts Obi-Wan. So I think that in and of itself is just a recognition of the fact that the singular and the plural of Clone Wars and Clone War are interchangeable. And I know Lucas talked about it. It's like, well, one war led to a bunch of little wars that went on along the same time. You know, it was all a time of conflict, as it were.
You know, I think it's interesting, too, that Anakin says, I have seen it will be the Jedi that stand in the way of peace.
Mm.
And I wonder if that is because it is the Jedi that are standing in the way of peace by being involved in this war in the first place, because they're propping up a government that shouldn't exist anymore. That's just too, you know, it's just too corrupt to be in existence, and they're not following the will of the Force. They're not doing what they're supposed to, something we've talked a lot about before. You know, I think that's really interesting, that idea that.
But it's not just, but see, I think you're right. I think it's the idea that it's not just Anakin's power that's feeding the sun. The Jedi are actually feeding the sun, because they're actually engaging in something that's not true to their cause and their mission and their fundamental truth. And you know, I make another Star Trek V call out here, because Ahsoka shows up, the part we're watching, Ahsoka pulls up on a speeder conveniently to save Obi-Wan from a long climb, makes me think of Spock showing up with his gravity boots to save Kirk and Bones. So another Star Trek V thing that I've reached out and grabbed. And Anakin's yellow eyes. He's gone over to the dark side. We appreciate that yellow eyes are a bad thing in Star Wars. It's an indication of where you stand. Which, you know, I want to take this moment to ask you a question. Why do Dooku's eyes never show yellow?
I always felt that Palpatine taught him the same trick that he knew of how to hide himself, his Sith self, so that people wouldn't know.
But don't we see his eyes turn yellow a couple of times during the Clone Wars series? Or at least once?
We might. I'd have to go back and watch, you know, because we might actually.
I submit to you that, of course, I'm sure there's a practical thing where they couldn't put the contacts into Christopher Lee, because I remember a story that he told that the contacts that they used in his Dracula days for the Hammer films, like, scarred his eyes, and he was like, can't do it. But, you know, of course, oh, well, you could do it digitally now or whatever like that. I would say that it's because Dooku's motivations, even though he did dark and terrible things, Dooku's motivations were more than personal. Anakin, I think that Anakin, Palpatine's motivation is personal power, personal gain. Anakin's motivation is personal control, personal.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, saving. Whereas Dooku's motivations were always about the galaxy is screwed up. I want to save everybody. He's not thinking about himself. Like, the way he turns, as we understand it, Dooku's motivations are never selfish per se. They become selfish maybe, but they're never selfish per se. They are always rooted in this idea of I want to fix the galaxy. He's an idealist. You know, Windu even says, or I'm sorry, Kia Di Mundi calls him an idealist. You know, in that one of those opening scenes from Attack of the Clones.
I love that the father says that the son broke the laws of time and showed you what you should never have seen. Mm-hmm. But it always, and this is the thing that kind of makes me wonder, in Star Wars, were the Jedi so worried about this whole idea of the Chosen One and their desire to understand prophecy and the future that they forgot to be focused on what Qui-Gon said, which was the here and now? And that's one of the things that got them into so much trouble, is this focus on, because Yoda later says in, you know, episode five, that always in motion is the future, you know?
Right.
So he's learned the lesson that, yes, we can sometimes see glimpses, but always in motion it is. So, therefore, our best opportunity is to focus on our here and now so that we can hopefully make the best future, not just a possible future that we may or may not have seen. And I wonder if the Jedi getting so kind of lost in that, and it partly being between, you know, it feels like from episode one to episode two, they really start to hold on to this idea that, well, maybe Anakin really is the chosen one, and kind of put all their eggs in one basket.
I don't know. I have trouble. I mean, I guess the Jedi embrace it once they bring Anakin on to become a Jedi, because of course Yoda is against it originally, and even Windu has skepticism about him being the chosen one. And you know, it's interesting.
The other thing I want to ask you here is that the father says, "My son, I hoped that you could resist the dark side." So is the son really dark side in the sense of, you know, what we think about as the super evil, or is he just the part of life that is death that brings new life? So it's more like the idea of like a Hades, where it's like, you know, he's not really Satan. He's just the ruler of the underworld, right? You know, and so that, but the son's embracing of the full corruption of what is good is really what the problem is. Like that idea we talked about what balance means, and that's where the son here goes wrong, is he fully embraces the dark side and not just the idea of his role in, you know, the circle of life.
No, I like that. I like that. I agree that he is necessary evil, but then craves to become active evil. And that's what throws things out. But you see balance again, that the father, you know, the father, the son, and the daughter all have to die. Like, I think that there's something set in motion where once the daughter dies, the father and the son have to go too, because that's balance.
Yeah.
There's no longer a control for any of them, because you can't just have two. You have to have the
Trinity.
The mitigating, the judgment force. Yeah, the Trinity. Yeah, the triune force family, as it were.
Well, and he says to Anakin that you are the chosen one and you will bring balance as long as you guard your heart, like watch your heart. And that can be the thing that could be his downfall, which obviously will be his downfall. Although,
yeah,
I think that's more romantic way of putting it. When his heart is not just about pure love, but it's really about control. And that those are two slightly different things, I think.
Yeah, I have a question for you here. How do you feel about the way that this resolves? Do you feel like, I can understand, I don't agree, but I could understand somebody saying, oh, that's such a dodge that, you know, they were outside of time and space, and so it didn't really impact the galaxy as we know it and stuff like that. I don't agree with that, but did you have any sort of moment where you were like, you know, the ending was kind of like, oh, okay, they were only gone for a second sort of thing?
Quick, I just want to note, this episode was edited by our good friend Nick Anastasio. So
yes,
thank you, Nick.
Very well edited. very well edited by Nick.
But I didn't think it was a dodge, because I felt like it was one of those moments, and what was great is that it's something that will come out throughout the series. They do remember bits and pieces of it, and Obi-Wan tends to think of it more as something that he's not sure if it happened or whatever, but Anakin does seem to believe that it did for sure. And so I feel like they do a great job by not just saying, oh yeah, this happened, and of course they remember every single thing that happened there. Because when this kind of like mind-bending alternate universe type experience of being in the nexus of the Force, it seems like to have the characters be able to say, oh, I totally remember everything, that seems unreasonable to me. I think this is a much more reasonable thing, that if you've had this kind of like a mind fracking experience, it's going to be very difficult to process, and it may take years before, or a lifetime before, you had any kind of semi full understanding, if that's even possible. So I actually think that they take a much a quote unquote more realistic approach by having this be something that will funnel out into the rest of the series in different ways, by not being something that the characters fully know what to do with. I mean, they just don't, they're not really even sure what to do with it.
Yeah. You know what? I agree with you. And I think that there is the added question, again, a philosophical, unresolvable question about how you deal with visions and prophecy. Do you simply say, oh, it was just a dream? Or do you, I've been reading, again, a lot about, the making of Blade Runner and everything. And apparently there was an experience in Philip Dick's life. Philip K. Dick is the author, who wrote Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, where he had an experience where he believed he encountered a vision, right? A supernatural vision that enabled him to see, live in first century Rome during the time of Jesus. And he spent a lot of time in his life questioning whether it was real, whether he just had a dream, whether it was a vision and a prophecy, he didn't know what to make of it. And I think that this sort of thing where you're talking about with, Obi-Wan's not quite sure, Anakin's convinced, everybody can have an experience. And I think that's something that is oddly missing sometimes from discussions, because if I were to come to you and say, I had a vision and it was this, I would say that, knowing you as well as I do, you'd say, you had a vision. Are you sure? Oh, that's cool. And you go along with it. But I have other friends where if I said I had a vision, you had a dream. No. I'm telling you, I had a vision. I'm not so sure visions happen. And then meanwhile, in between Anakin and Obi-Wan, you have Ahsoka, who winds up arguably going down the very path that we see to reestablish the family, as it were.
Well, and I think that that, again, that's what's so interesting is that she is the one in the middle. She says, I'm not a Jedi anymore. Yeah. Her lightsabers are white. I mean,
it's
so perfect, right? I mean, it just makes so much sense for her to be the mother.
You know what would have been so awesome? And I don't know that it would ever gone down this route, but I almost want to write a fanfic piece where the spirit of Anakin and the spirit of Obi-Wan are, the sister and the brother roles, and Ahsoka's the parent, the mother, instead of the father.
Mm.
But she crossed over in an ascension sort of manner without death sort of thing, and they're the ones who died and went to... Anakin is the last one to join them, as it were.
Oh, yeah.
And so they are Mortis.
Yeah, basically she's the Elijah of the group. Like, she never dies. She just gets...
Yeah, or the Mary or the Jesus, yeah. Who just go up to heaven.
Hmm.
How... That would be so interesting to me.
Huh.
I
want to write that fanfic now. But if you want to persuade Matt to write the fanfic... Matt, where can they reach you online?
Well, John, you could find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. You can find me here on the network doing Outposts with Drea Kaufman as we talk about Harry Potter. We're doing one chapter at a time. And yeah, by the time you hear this, we will have finished The Prisoner of Azkaban. So make sure you check that out. You can also find me over on Trek FM doing a couple of shows. I do The Orb with Chris Jones talking all about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and The General Geek Show talking about all the fandoms we love. The 602 Club, which is the General Geek Show talking about all the fandoms we love. I hope you will check that out. And then last but not least, doing Cinema Stories with my pal Courtney as we talk all about film through the lens of faith. But John, if people want to catch up with you and talk about the awesomeness of Mortis or anything else going on in Star Wars or anything else that's just maybe percolating in their brain, where can they find you?
Well, of course, I'm Castle Junkie Online. You can find me there. You can find me here on The Nerd Party, co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler. And you can find me co-hosting out there in the ether, Words with Nerds, with my pal Craig, who would tell me definitely it's a dream and not a vision. And, you know, outside of that, you know, if you send up smoke signals, maybe, you know, bribe me with a darksaber or something like that, you know, you can find me out there. So with all of that said, Matt, I think it's time to close for the 100th time. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.